an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Welcome back for another episode of the Neighborhood Archive Podcast. It's been several months after what we had hoped would only be a month or so, but we're back and happy to be here because we're in the middle of what I would say is a perfect example of living in a very small world. After covering a lot of the classic episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, I've typed a name at least once every five episodes for the past several years' worth of episodes, and that name being David Smith. And come to find out through a friend of a friend of my in-laws, Mr. Smith has lived for several years only about 15 minutes from where I live. And so here I sit today in his living room, face-to-face with Mr. David Smith, who was the assistant art director, correct?
Yes.
On Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for a good chunk of the 1970s. So David, thank you so much for inviting me, first of all, into your home and for taking some time to talk with us today.
Well, it's good to be here.
What I'd like to do is just really just hear about your experiences with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, hear about any kind of candid stories you might remember from working on the program, kind of how you got to that position in the first place. Because I remember from our previous conversations when we spoke recently that you didn't really know what you were getting into. You knew it was a children's television show, but that was about the extent of it. So maybe we start there. I'd like to hear maybe if you would share how you got yourself to Pittsburgh working with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Well, I lived in Pittsburgh, just north of Pittsburgh, up in Beaver. That's north of Pittsburgh. My father worked for a steel company in Pittsburgh. So I came along with the family, but I was going to school at Purdue at the time. So I was commuting back and forth. So after I got out of school, had to go into the Army, got out of the Army in 71 and started looking for jobs in Pittsburgh and went to a job fair for veterans. And through a lot of false leads, got referred to a television station. They didn't have a job, but the guy knew Jack Guest, the mm-hmm. art director on the show. And I was referred there and showed my portfolio and got the job. But my degree was in design, advertising, mm-hmm. and I had no idea what you do in television. So that's how I got started.
So I can imagine not only no idea what to do in television, but children's television at that was probably an added level to the new experience.
Well, yeah. Any program would have been strange, but sure. just learning what you can get away with visually was what I had to learn.
So what were some of your responsibilities in that position, you know, from the start and, you know, and through your time working with the program, what were your responsibilities and your duties as assistant art director? You know, maybe even some examples of some things that viewers familiar with the program would recognize.
Okay. My most basic chore was keeping all the set pieces looking good, looking like they're supposed to.
Sure.
Because when they're moving back and forth from the set shop to the studio, there'd be nicks and things like that, mm-hmm. sometimes additions and stuff. But anyway, I had to touch up scratches and things. And then as I was with the program longer and longer, I was able to design more complex props mm-hmm. and things. Probably the most familiar one was I did the new version of the neighborhood, which the program opens up mm-hmm. on. And then
the model houses?
Yeah.
I know that's a really popular piece that people ask about. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, those were mostly modified versions of what, railroad houses and railroad sets?
HO scale structures mm-hmm. that I would cut apart and whatever.
And just kind of morph them together into different...
Yeah, so when the camera pulled in on them... you would see Mr. Rogers' house, mm-hmm. And then they would pull back, and then you go to the bakery and the mm-hmm. different other places. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a well, not every once in a while, you know, whenever he went to someplace else that didn't have a place,
right.
We'd make something up.
Throw something
quick.
Together in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah.
I know there's some people that have done a lot of work, and I mean, I guess you could say even research to determine what those actual models were that were, you know,
oh, really?
And they've tried to determine, you know, well, this is a combination of this piece and this piece. And
yeah.
So there's a lot of detail that's out there. I think some of it's ended up on even the message boards on this site.
That's amazing.
Of people discussing, you know, dissecting your handiwork from,
yeah.
From back in the day. So how about the people on the set, whether that was other crew members, other cast members, any specific people or stories stand out in your mind?
Well, thinking back on the 4 years, or I think it was four or five seasons, there were so many people that, you know, you had seen in the headlines. We talked to an astronaut once. He was in opera singers all the time, sports figures. That was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But being behind the scenes, we didn't really get to sit and watch the program. Very rarely did we see a whole program start to finish
mm-hmm.
because we were shooting in segments. I can remember meeting Mean Joe Green, the
yeah.
football player.
Yeah.
I can remember shaking his hand, and it just didn't go. Yeah, it's just the cliched, you know, huge football player and
mm-hmm.
starstruck.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, and that was amazing. My goodness, it's just really hard to come up with all the ones that were. I'm sure if somebody mentioned, oh yeah, I remember him, but.
Mm-hmm.
Right now,
you know, I wouldn't say commonly, but I've heard stories through the grapevine about that era of cast and crew being kind of a fun time to work on that set, for lack of a better description. I've heard some stories, whether they're true or not, just about the crew having a good time along with the cast and just like liking to be somewhat jokesters and enjoying working together. Anything stand out as examples of stories you might remember with just having a good time on the set?
Well, we didn't really have a good time on the set. It was business.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we were setting up scenes or
mm-hmm.
striking them, taking them down and things like that, we'd have a good time. We hung around a lot outside of the WQED, outside
okay.
of the studios. I know Siech and one of the, I don't know if you'd know, Bednar, he was one of the
I recognize
engineers.
The name. Mm-hmm.
We all played on a softball team.
Oh, okay.
So we would drive out to the hinterlands of western Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and my girlfriend, fiance, wife
mm-hmm.
would tag along. She loved softball. And then when the games were over, coming back into Pittsburgh, we'd go to a drive-in theater or something
mm-hmm.
like that. So we played softball. Bednar and I played handball at a local, or not handball, but racquetball.
Yeah.
We'd party together all
yeah.
the time. And when Michael Douglas, who is now Michael Keaton, was
mm-hmm.
on the floor crew, he tried to do stand-up comedy. And he was pretty good at it. But we would go to his shows and harass him. And sometimes we'd come in as the Zucchini Brothers.
And we'll get to the Zucchini Brothers here in a few minutes
yeah.
because this is going to be, I think, one of the best parts of the conversation is when
yeah.
we get to that. But, you mentioned Michael Douglas or Michael Keaton. Was he pretty much the personality that you see on television and movies today? I mean,
sometimes. At the time, we thought he was just going to be comedic.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, you know, he's in some pretty heavy roles.
Right.
But yeah, he had his serious sides, but most
mm-hmm.
of us had our serious sides, but they very rarely came
right.
out.
Right,
right. And in the sound lock and stuff like that, waiting for a take to finish up and stuff, we'd have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Horse around. We'd practice our tricks.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Well, you know, we mentioned the, you know, the personality of Michael Douglas. You know, another common thing that I hear from anybody I speak with associated with the show is that Fred himself was what you see is what you get. You know, that he was the same off camera as he was the personality you saw on camera. And I always ask people, is that an accurate description?
Spot on, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Although on camera you would never see him, I'd hate to say mad,
mm-hmm.
but you could tell when he was upset.
Sure.
But he never let it, I don't know, harm anyone or anything like that. And very rarely was he upset with anything.
Sure.
So, yeah, he was a really nice fellow.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least kind of leads me to my next question, which would be, what was it like to work for him? I mean, was he all business? Was he, did he have his fun and relaxed side? Or when it came time to film, was it down to business and it was...
All that.
All of that together.
And then during the holiday seasons and stuff, I remember he would have a cast and crew Christmas party.
Mm.
And we'd go over to his house.
Mm-hmm.
And what a house.
Mm-hmm.
He treated everyone as individuals. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't like working for him. I considered myself working for Jack Guest.
Okay.
Because we were in the quote-unquote art scene,
sure,
department. It really wasn't like a boss-employee situation, mm-hmm, because... we were creative people,
mm-hmm,
and we were treated as such.
Yeah, everyone had their niche, it seemed like.
Yep.
Where everybody came together for the, yep, common cause. So, well, let's get down to it here. Let's talk about the Zucchini Brothers. This is this was probably the most excited I've been about a conversation or a portion of a conversation in a while, because you yourself were part of the Flying Zucchini Brothers.
That's right.
In fact, what part of the Zucchini Brothers were you?
Well, I was the All-American All-Star One-Man Band.
Okay.
I was the fellow with the drum and the cymbal and the kazoo,
mm-hmm,
and the colorful jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, for those unfamiliar, I don't mean to interrupt, but for those unfamiliar with the Zucchini Brothers, what this was there were a few episodes in the late 70s where Digger DeGorum had... a basket that her gift to King Friday for his birthday was, he would look into this basket and it would show this performance of, it was maybe 60 seconds in length, of this acrobatic troupe, we'll call it, called the Flying Zucchini Brothers. In conversations here, you know, I've learned that this was more than just a 60 second performance.
Right. We were like a band. We tried to go out and do... parties and small conventions and things like that, and we put on our act, which we called a guerrilla circus.
Mm-hmm.
We had a few tricks, sight gags mostly, we would try to pull off, and most places we'd go, people would find it very humorous. Keaton would try some stand-up comedy with Tallow, and I was once Bronco Cody. I was supposed to shoot out balloons. We had this big board with the balloons on there, you know, and of course a hole behind him and a guy behind,
right,
him with a pin, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it wouldn't pop. That happened about once. It was sight gags. We would do, mm-hmm, things that would, you know, you'd look at them and they'd make you laugh.
Right.
And
I love the fact that you guys did this as public performances. I had it,
yeah,
in my head. I assumed it was just a one-off performance that was done as a gag for the show. But to find out that this was an ongoing,
yeah,
performance, yeah, is fantastic. So, and you said your wife was a part of this performance as well?
Right. And Nick Tallow's wife were the Casserole Sisters, Tuna and Noodle Casserole. And Tallow would come out and try to read people's minds in the audience. And of course, they were in the audience with purses packed with, you know, things that you wouldn't think of. You know, he'd go, I see toilet paper. And she goes, yes, yes. Pull out a roll of toilet paper from her purse. But it was all prearranged, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And we had groupies to help us with our props and, mm-hmm, stuff like that. And we did the local Pittsburgh area. We judged neighborhood talent shows,
mm-hmm,
maybe once. You know, we'd make our decisions, and of course, nobody was happy with it.
Right, right.
So we did that once.
And you mentioned you earlier that when Michael Keaton was doing his stand-up,
mm-hmm,
you said that you would show up in,
yeah, we,
in character.
We'd come into the audience sometimes just to see how he was doing, just see what the crowd was, mm-hmm, like and stuff. And of course, there were the times... there was nobody in the audience,
because, mm-hmm,
You know, he he hadn't made a name for himself or anything like that. But, you know, we'd laugh boisterously and, you know, and try to help him out.
Right.
And, of course, try to heckle him and everything.
So where has life taken you post-neighborhood? I mean, you're retired now, I know you mentioned.
When the Rogers Show went out of production in 75? Anyway, there was not going to be a next season.
Right.
So I thought, I don't know if I want to stay in production television because it was a grind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to become employed at WILL as the art director.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for 4 years, 5 years, something like that. And kind of decided that I didn't like working in television because of the deadlines and things like that. So my wife and I moved to Ireland. We had an opportunity to do that. Stayed there a year and then had another opportunity and we moved to Tokyo, Japan for 4 years.
Okay.
And I worked in some Japanese television and theater and got some paintings in galleries. And she taught at an international school. And then we came back here, and since we left here, we thought we'd at least set out from here. And she got teaching positions here, and I took odd jobs and pursued a painting career. And that's 20, 30 years ago. I don't know. But anyway, I basically am a painter.
So overall, I mean, looking back over the past few decades, you know, 2-3 decades, you know, I'm sure that, you know, doing work as a painter versus, you know, an art director on a children's show are two very different positions, two very different jobs. What are your overall thoughts just on your time working as an art director, specifically with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood? You know, good experience, mediocre experience, anything stand out?
It went from the very best to the very worst. I remember one production season, I didn't get to watch one Pittsburgh Steeler football game. And this is when the Steelers were good. And but we were, when we call in studio, moving sets in and out, you know, still building, still making stuff. And it was just 7 days a week. I used to sleep on the rolled up rugs in the prop shop at times because it was a grind. And of course, being young and virile, you could do it. But my goodness, it really wore on you. But we were treated fairly, got a good wage for back then. But it kind of burnt you out.
Yeah, I bet.
And I think I kind of grated under the fact that I had to do what other people told me. You know, and after, you know, a whole lot of years, you find out that's not a good position for me. But it was, you know, your first thought, boom, you got to do it. You got to build it. You know, there's no time to think about, well, what if we do it this way?
Right.
There was no time to say, well, what if we could do it this way?
And that's one of the things I've mentioned to you a few times in our conversations off of the recording is just that, you know, having seen some of the set pieces, I'm always blown away, or I was when I got to see them, by the fact that it's plywood and paint and some screws and some nails, that it's not these big Hollywood productions that you assume that they are as you're a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old watching the show growing up.
Some of the pieces that some of the sets that were recurring, you know, like his house and the neighborhood of make-believe and things. Over the years, those pieces do get reinforced and built substantially because they're rolling in and out all the time. But one-off sets and stuff like that, you know, sometimes you're back there holding the thing together. And I was mainly interested. It evolved to me. I made the little hand props and stuff like that.
Okay.
And they had to work on camera. And if they broke, you better be able to fix it fast or have another one. So sometimes you're making two and three of the same thing. And you had to figure out who's going to be using this. Because there were some people that could, you know, they could, they were, Bob Rowe was very nimble with his fingers. So you could make a very crude thing and he'd make it look good. And there are other people that, sure, he's got to do this, you know. Oh, I can't work with this. No, no. You know, you get that kind of thing. You know,
was there some of that from the,
yeah,
I guess from the talent, so to speak, from the
talent. Yeah.
There was an aspect of,
there were a couple of people that were, recurring characters. They weren't really main characters, but they could be prima donnas because in their own field, they were very good.
Sure.
But, you know, here you're done. Sure. That's a crummy little children's program.
Right. Yeah. That's by no means a loaded question at all. Yeah. But I have heard that before, that there, you know, there were people that came and went on the show that were difficult to work with at times.
Yeah.
But, it's always interesting to hear that side of things, because the finished polished product, you would never know that. Or as a kid, you don't pick up on those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I tell you what, the one question I always wrap up with, or I tend to wrap up with when I talk with people, is about just the message of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You know, I know that in recent years on television, there's been some dispute that maybe kids should not be told, hey, you're special just because you're you. And that's not necessarily the best message, because it kids, in some people's opinion, that brings them up with a sense of entitlement or a sense of an over-exaggerated opinion of themselves. What are your thoughts, just in general, on the message that the show portrayed and what it brought to kids who were tuning in?
Well, at that time, there was the Sesame Street political party, mm-hmm, and the Rogers political, mm-hmm, party. Sesame Street was rote memorization.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, kids were used as props. Whereas on the Rogers show, they weren't. You might see them as walkthroughs in a store or something, but I think he tried to get across each kid is an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And you are special. You might not be the best in the world, but I like you just the way you are.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've always respected about the program itself, is that, you know, exactly like what you said, you may not be the best at what you're doing, but
yeah,
in your own special way, you're doing the best that you can, and you're special in that way.
If
you know,
if you try your hardest and you give it your best,
mm-hmm,
and you don't win,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't mean you're a failure. That,
exactly,
means this other guy was, for some other reason, or some other girl,
mm-hmm,
had better skills or, mm-hmm, whatever. And
which I think he lived that out, you know, himself on the show. You know, there's examples. You know, the more popular one is the one where he's breakdancing or attempting to breakdance, you know, on an episode in the early 80s where he looked very foolish in trying,
yeah,
it, but he tried it nonetheless, and,
sure,
you know, and complimented the boy that he was with at the time on his talent,
mm-hmm,
you know, and said, mm-hmm, you know, basically exactly what you said. I'm not going to be the best at everything I try, but at least I'm trying.
It, for some reason, it struck, you know, you asked me who you saw on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Child.
Right, right.
I can remember her dropping a fish on the studio floor. Whoop, pick it right up, you know, and Fritz, no, you can't do it, cut, cut. But she was a hoot. And a lot of the people that came in that were, you know, outside successful, mm-hmm, like Julia Child, those were the good times.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred and, that they would get along, it would be great to hear them talk and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Anything else for the good of the cause? Anything that comes to mind as far as just memories of the show or thoughts of your time in Pittsburgh or your time with the neighborhood?
Well, I did meet my wife there, not on the program. She taught right next door at Central Catholic High School.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were on break and things like that, and we were going through our football pick sheets and stuff, we could look out across the football field at Central Catholic, and my wife would be teaching in there, and, mm-hmm, and after we got married, we could come to work together and things like,
yeah,
that. So those were good times. And the social scene at that time, 72 to, I think about 75 or 76, was just jumping.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet.
And I lived right almost in the center of the that age group's night scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time.
Yeah.
But hard work.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time just to share a few thoughts. You know, like I said, just the small world, you know, knowing that for these 8 years I've been doing this website, and you've been 15 minutes away. It's good to make this connection, and it's good to hear the stories from the experience.
I it's strange because, you know, people find out, you know, like you're in a social setting, and they find out you worked on the Rogers Show, mm-hmm. you know, and then that's about it. Mm-hmm. Or they say, well, how was Fred, you know, and that was it. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually having to talk about it is rare.
Right.
You know, I'm going, my goodness.
Conversations like this, I assume, don't come up on a regular basis.
No, they don't. And my wife and I, we can talk to each other in shorthand about it. Mm-hmm. To string together a conversation, it's
sure.
Like, my goodness.
Sure. Well, I can't thank you enough just for taking the time to talk and to share some thoughts and some memories from the neighborhood.
No problem.